And then the circumstance, the beginning of the prayer is, in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's words, Kunti was feeling overwhelmed with gratitude. Her heart was just flooded with gratitude for Krishna, having just experienced the recent events, event after event after event after event. And she felt so indebted and grateful and appreciative of Krishna. She just poured out from her heart her appreciations of Krishna. And then at the end, well, towards the end, there's this request, please don't go. But in a mood that was not even considering the circumstance was Krishna was on a chariot. All the celebration of Yudhisthira being enthroned as the emperor of the world, Queen Kunti being the mother and her son, after years and years and years and years and years and years of mistreatment, attempted murder, abusive behavior, so many things. Her son is now the king of the world, and it's knowing that that's what Krishna wanted. She's like the Pandavas, they're eternal associates of Krishna, not a post that someone can occupy and become Arjuna in your next life or something. He's eternally in that position. Similarly, Queen Kunti. At least from the Srimad Bhagavatam perspective. We didn't discuss this, but the Bhagavatam perspective of the Pandavas, when it came to this very puzzling consideration of Dharma, where unknowingly Kunti had said when Draupadi was brought from Draupadi's Swayambar and Arjuna spoke saying, from the outside of the house or the dwelling where Kunti was staying, oh, Mother Kunti, we have brought a wonderful jewel and we would like to show you. And Kunti from inside the house said, well, whatever the jewel, share amongst yourselves. And then they showed the jewel. It was Draupadi. Now, there's a Dharma dilemma. What are the Pandavas to do? They're to abide by their order of their mother, Kunti. But at the same time, five men marrying the same woman, is that within the codes of Dharma? So not knowing what to do, they consulted Vyasa. And it wasn't only Kunti and the Pandavas that were in dilemma, it was Draupadi's father. This is now the Mahabharata version. Mahabharata version says that Vyasadeva was consulted and he sat with the family members, and again there's different versions of Mahabharata, but one of the versions says Vyasadeva disclosed that in Draupadi's previous life she was the daughter of a Brahmana. She had undergone austerities on behalf of Lord Shiva, petitioning Lord Shiva that she wanted a qualified husband. And when Lord Shiva came before this Brahmani, she was bewildered and said five times, in response to what is it that you would like. I would like a qualified husband, she said 5 times. And he said, very well, you have 5 qualified husbands in your next life. So what is foretold by Lord Shiva cannot be irreligious. And so it can be done. She can have 5 wives, 5 husbands. And according to Mahabharata, just to double ensure King Drupad, Vyas requested Drupad to come to a separate room. Everyone else was asked to leave, a private little discussion. And he said that in their previous lives, each of the 5 Pandavas were Indra, and showed him this vision that they were Indra, and now they're in this Pandava position. And Draupadi, I forget, some expansion of the Goddess of Fortune or something to that effect. And seeing the vision, Drupada was convinced. Okay, I'll go along with this arrangement. My daughter is not ordinary. Even the way that she was born was not ordinary. That's the Mahabharata version. They were previously Indra. The Bhagavad version is that they're eternal associates of Krishna. Wherever Krishna appears, performing his Bhauma Leela, Pandavas are there. And similarly, when the Pandavas depart, according to the Mahabharata, they first had to see hell because each of them had made some mistake, and then after seeing hell, they went to heaven. The Bhagavatam version is different. The Bhagavatam version is, in their self-same body, they went back to Godhead. With Queen Kunti, the departure of Queen Kunti is different in the Mahabharata than it is in the Bhagavatam. In the Mahabharata, when Dhritarashtra and Gandhari entered the forest and gave up their bodies in a fire of meditation, Kunti joined them. Some versions say that there was a forest fire and she was burned in the forest fire, some little different version. So the Srimad Bhagavatam says specifically that as her sons, she also concentrated her mind upon the personality of Godhead and achieved him in that way, without the detail of exactly how she went back to Godhead or joined the Supreme Lord. The Bhagavatam sees her as an eternal associate, like the Pandavas are. Her position is very, very special. So when she's pouring out her heart to Krishna in these prayers, she's disclosing truths She's very attached to him, huh? Yes? No? Looks like. Okay. She's disclosing truths about him, so she wants to glorify him. And so she glorifies him with overwhelming feelings of gratitude. So just quickly review the first 3 of her prayers, starts with text 18. O Lord Krishna, I offer my obeisances unto you because you are the original personality and are not affected by the qualities of material world. You're existing both within and without everything, yet you are invisible to all. So just quickly comment. She, even at the very beginning, she's acknowledging the same thing that the message of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam says. The Paribhasa Sutra of the Bhagavatam is Krishna is the source of all avatars. Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam. He is the absolute truth, the source of everything. So she understands that. He's the absolute truth, the source of everything. And as such, he's beyond the influence of that which he creates. He creates, but he's not influenced by that which he creates. He's not under the influence of the modes of nature, although the modes of nature come from him. He's the controller of the modes of nature. He's not controlled by the modes of nature. Totally transcendental. The source of everything. Absolute truth. And then, the other half is the contradiction, or apparent contradiction. Very puzzling nature of Krishna. He's inside everything, he's outside of everything, and nobody sees him. Now she's seeing him, and there's, the image isn't here, there's a whole public square full of throngs of people that are also seeing him. But seeing him, but not seeing him. Seeing him in not seeing him in the following way. That's the next text. Beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are the eternally irreproachable factor covered by the curtain of deluding energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. So, people that see Krishna don't see Krishna because they think common people, or using in this verse, foolish people, just as Krishna uses that the same term, mudha, foolish people, think Manushim Panamashritam, Krishna has assumed a form, a material form, a human-like form. So they think of Krishna as human-like, like us. He's just a better version of us. But there's the covering, the body, and then there's Krishna. And Krishna, the covering and Krishna, the person, are different. And people think that way because of the deluding potency. Just like, metaphor is given, an actor in a costume someone may not recognize. A family member, a mother, may not recognize her son or daughter on stage in a costume. Who's that? When it's their own son or daughter, because the costume conceals the identity. So Krishna's form is Krishna, but people don't see that. They see he's one of us. Instead of he's not one of us. He's the transcendent Lord who is the source of us. That's quite different. In terms of tattva, in terms of truth or reality. So people don't see him properly. Vishwanath is a similar example of a puppet. And the puppeteer. Someone doesn't see the puppeteer that's moving the strings of the puppet. I showed the image of a puppet playing violin. So the puppet is playing the violin. The puppets don't play violins without a puppeteer. And similarly, people of this world don't do things without the controller of Prakriti. The Krishna is their remote control. You don't see the puppeteer. There's a curtain behind which the puppeteer is situated, but you don't see because of the curtain. Similarly, Krishna's curtain of Mahamaya prevents one from seeing Krishna. And then we discussed this verse from Bhagavad Gita, Yoga Maya Samavrita, Naham Prakashya Sarvasya, yoga maya samadhi. People don't see Krishna because of this curtain of yoga maya. And specifically, I always wondered about that verse. Well, just until I read these commentaries. It's the yoga maya samavrata, that yoga maya is not the internal potency, it's the reflection of the internal potency, or it's mahamaya, who is an extension or expansion of yoga maya. So Krishna uses the word yoga maya samavrata. The deluding potency for us is mahamaya. Mahamaya conceals Krishna from us, we can't see him. And for Kunti, her bewilderment is not like, you know, the bewilderment of a foolish person, although she's in a very humble manner likening herself to a foolish person. But she sees qualities in Krishna that are opposite. He protects his devotee, but he allows the sons of Draupadi and son of Subhadra to be killed. He promises he won't take up a weapon, he takes up a weapon. There's, etc. There's seeming contradictory characteristics or qualities in Krishna that her tells her, I don't understand you. I see you, but I don't see you. And Krishna's, Vishwanath says, Krishna's saying, why are you speaking like this? You see me. You know my position. You've already described, you know my position. So why are you demeaning yourself in this way? Because I don't understand you. I see you, but I don't see you in these ways. Then text 20. You yourself decided to descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service unto the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists, paramahamsas, that's the Sanskrit term, and mental speculators, who are purified, amala atmanam is the Sanskrit. Their souls are amala. Their souls are purified by dint of their spiritual efforts, and they become purified, discerning matter from spirits, and Krishna has descended to bestow upon them some appreciation of his transcendental pastimes. But Kunti is saying, they don't understand you, even with all of that. So how are we as spirit souls embodied in a woman's body, how is it possible that we're going to understand? If they can't understand, how are we going to understand? Prabhupada explains this very nicely. Her mood is completely humble, but at the same time, she's understanding things that the paramahamsas don't understand, and the great speculators don't understand. She's understanding the power of bhakti in contrast and far beyond the power of gyan. Even when Gyanis try to understand the bhakti process, they see it as a means to an end, not an end in itself. They don't understand the bhakti process. They don't understand Bhagavan, bhakti, and the bhakta. Queen Kunti understands Bhagavan, bhakti, and the bhakta. But her outstanding, one of her outstanding features is her quality of humility that says, I can't understand. And Prabhupada is explaining in the purport, the Supreme, or Krishna, is only knowable by his mercy. And Krishna is looking to see the sincerity. And based upon sincerity, one will act. You know, what's in your heart comes out. And when one acts sincerely in devotion to the Supreme Lord, then he discloses himself. And to the degree that he discloses himself, he's knowable. And to the degree he doesn't disclose himself because one isn't sufficiently sincere, so he doesn't face himself, he reserves the right not to disclose himself before an offensive person. one can fault him for that. It's not a fault. Someone will make offense because they won't understand, because they don't have the capacity to understand even if he discloses himself. She's giving some very deep teachings on knowing the absolute truth, just in very simple prayers. So now we're going to cover verses 21 through 24. So, Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nandagopakumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha. So he, Namo Namaha, she is speaking without false ego, submitting herself in a humble mood before Krishna, offering her respectful obeisances to Krishna, who now his mysterious pastimes. First it was speaking of his qualities, now it's speaking of his pastimes. So he has appeared as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki for the pleasure of Devaki. Then here this image is, he's at Vasudeva's placing by the side of Mother Yashoda, the female child, the male child, excuse me, and leaving and carrying with him the female child. So Mother Yashoda becomes the one who raises Krishna. Sometimes it's spoken like this, the foster parents, Nanda and Yashoda. And then once he grows, he becomes the delight of Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd boys in the palace of Nanda Maharaj. And the mood of Krishna in Vrindavan is so wonderful. Not the formality of all the respect and reverence and pomp and splendor that could you move? This is a scene in Nanda's palace where, look at the big feast being offered to Krishna. Musicians, dramatists, monkey trainer. So many, playful festival in Vrindavan. This is Krishna in Vrindavan. The translation provided by Vishwanath: I repeatedly offer respects to Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, who gave joy to Devaki, who is the child of Nanda and satisfier of the senses of the gopis. His commentary: among all the avatars, you are the best. Though all those who have prema are fortunate, my brother Vasudeva was most fortunate, since you selected him as your father. So naturally, Kunti has some appreciation for her brother because it's her brother. But she's not attached on the bodily platform. She's appreciating the special privilege, the honor of being in that relationship of father of Krishna, because she understands Krishna's position. But through reverential devotion, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And your mother, endowed with even more prema, is most fortunate. You made her more successful than all others by situating yourself in her womb alone. So Devaki Nanda Nayacha, one who gives joy to Devaki. Nanda, endowed with more prema, is most fortunate. You let him experience the sweetness of your infant or Kumara pastimes. Nanda Gopakumarai. Yashoda, with abundant prema, is most fortunate. Stay tuned for text 31. So there's a verse 31 that she's in her own category. She's the best of the best. The pastimes of your Kishora age have even more sweetness than the Kumara pastimes. Thus Kunti addresses Krishna to Govinda. He's indicating there's a hierarchy of rasa in her prayer. She's not expanding and teaching, but she understands these things. Krishna got the name Govinda at the beginning of his Kishora age after he was bathed by the Surabhi cow. You take possession, Dinda, of all the senses of all people. Govinda. There's a nice painting. Surabhi appeared after Indra's torrential downpour of rain, and Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill to protect the residents of Vrindavan for 7 days and nights. Indra realized his big offense. He went to different descriptions. He went to Brahaspati to seek advice. Brahaspati's advice was, you really did it this time. And the only way that you can correct the situation is you go and appeal to Krishna for forgiveness. But given the gravity of what you've done, I don't know if even Krishna is going to pay attention, but if you bring someone who is very dear to Krishna with you, then he will soften. Bring Surabhi. So Indra brought Surabhi. Surabhi offered her Abhishek of Krishna, and it was Surabhi that gave Krishna the cow, the name Govinda. You are our Indra, not that fellow. You are our Lord. And you give pleasure to the cows, and you take possession of the cows. You're the protector of the cows. So Govinda, name was given. Krishna loves the cows, and the cows love Krishna. The enjoyers of this form of Krishna are not mentioned because of their extraordinary nature, the esoteric nature of this love, and the lack of qualifications of others to taste it. Now that's Vishwanath Hussain, quite a rasika bhakta. Then another, when I was the first year or two as a devotee in the Hare Krishna movement, all the devotees in the temple would go out and Harinam Sankirtan every day, sometimes twice a day, sometimes 8 to 10 hours a day. And along with chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we learned the previous verse. We would sing the Hare Krishna mantra, a certain melody, and then we'd sing the other one. Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nandugo. Same melody, and then go back to the Hare Krishna mantra. The people didn't know the difference. Right? They don't know what we're saying anyways. But it was a nice meditation on the mood of Kunti and the calling of Krishna in these different ways. And now, similarly, Nama Pankaja Maline, 4 verses, on all with Pankaja. My respectful obeisances are unto you, O Lord, whose abdomen is marked with depression, like a lotus flower, who are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, whose glance is as cool as the lotus, and whose feet are engraved with lotuses. Now, Acharya's comment that normally someone would meditate on the form of the Lord, starting looking at the feet of the Lord. But in this case, she's his aunt, so she doesn't start looking at the feet of the Lord. She starts at his abdomen and he comes back around to his feet. This word, pankaja, has these two parts. Panka means mud, and ja indicates generation or source of birth. So, pankaja is lotus, is generated from his navel. So, lotuses grow from mud, and the personality of Godhead generates the universe through this, in Lord Brahma, the firstborn living being in this way. Prabhupada is going to now comment, commenting on this verse. These statements are taken directly from Prabhupada explaining this verse to a public audience. If we see a lotus flower, we can immediately remember Krishna. Just like if you love your child, if you see any garment, a small ship, toys, or any playthings, immediately you remember your child. Oh, this is my child's shoes. This is my child's playthings. This is his garment. So, it is the custom of love. So, by making reference to Pankajanabhaya, Prabhupada is indicating, Kunti is just seeing the image of a lotus or using the term of a lotus flower. It's reminding her of Krishna. Nama Pankaja Nabhaya. Krishna's navel is just like lotus flower. From the navel of Krishna, Garbhadakshat Vishnu, there was a stem of lotus flower, and from that lotus flower, Brahma came out. And Brahma created this universe. This universe means so many planets, so many seas, mountains and cities, motor cars. That came later. Everything within that lotus flower, the beginning is found. There's Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and from Garbhadakshay Vishnu's Pankaja Nabhaya, his lotus navel, this lotus grew in Lord Brahma, then appeared. And within the stem of the lotus, all the planets of the universe are to be found. It's a pretty big stem. The second line is Nama Pankaja Maline. Prabhupada speaking. Here's a garland. There's so many flowers. Krishna's not so poor that simply producing one lotus flower, he's finished. No. There's a garland of lotus flowers. Big garland. As many lotus flowers as you want. This is God. There's so many nice paintings of Krishna with lotus flowers. Here he's one in his hand and what he's wearing. Standing near a pond of lotus flowers. And one of the favorite activities of the gopis is offering Krishna beautiful garlands. Sometimes lotuses and sometimes other fragrant, colorful flowers. It's the happiness of the servants of Krishna to make such offerings. Nama Pankajanetraya. Krishna's eyes are compared with the petals of a lotus flower, just as Lord Brahma speaks in this verse from Brahma Samhita. Aloka Chandrakala Sarvada Malya Mamshi. His eyes are like lotuses. It's her meditation on Krishna. So starting with his navel, his chest, his eyes, and then finally his feet are engraved with lotuses. this is a drawing of the markings on Krishna's feet. He got a lot of markings. I don't think anybody else who did their reading of their markings on their feet would look anything like this. But there's one marking that's there on both feet. There's a lotus, there's a lotus. So Krishna's who by walking on earth when he appeared from the soft sand in Vrindavan and where he was, the markings of lotuses were pressed into the sand. And so that auspiciousness of Krishna's lotus feet are part of her meditation. Another image of the same. But Vishwanath's comment, Kunti is saying, I am also counted among the fortunate, for you give happiness to my eyes, receiving the sight of your navel, garland, eyes and feet, become pleasantly cool. Can I share this with about your meditation while taking Bhakti Vaibhava? It's okay? No? The Srimad Bhagavatam is said to be a manifestation of Krishna's form. Canto by canto, different parts of Krishna's body, starting with Krishna's lotus feet. So the first canto and the second canto, they don't resemble, it's not metaphorical, they are Krishna's lotus feet. So when, just like we're doing right now, this is, Queen Kunti's prayers is in the first canto, this is meditation upon Krishna's lotus feet. So from a transcendental meditation perspective, we're just now meditating on Krishna's lotus feet. In fact, keep going through the first canto again and again and again and again and again and again. And guess what? You're at Krishna's lotus feet. And guess what? If you're at Krishna's lotus feet, you found Krishna. Because Krishna and his feet aren't separate. It's Krishna. And that, the meaning of that, at his lotus feet, or at least one of the implications is the mood of humility. Because how can you be at Krishna's lotus feet without humility? Or say it opposite. People that aren't humble aren't going to place themselves at Krishna's lotus feet. Supposing somebody is inclined to mental speculation, and they hear, you know, this Srimad Bhagavatam is a very special book. So they'll approach the first canto in a speculative way and not understand it. The meaning, like Kunti is saying, that even the Paramahamsas can't understand you and your pastimes, those that have the capacity to discriminate matter and spirit and become purified by that, they can't understand. But the medium for understanding is devotion, and devotion requires humility. So this Kunti's magic becomes more and more and more relishable as one enters into the mood of humility that Kunti has in honoring Krishna in these very wonderful ways. Verse number 23. O Rishikesha, Master of the senses, O Lord of lords, you have released your mother Devaki, who was long imprisoned and distressed by the envious Kamsa, and me and my children from a series of constant dangers. So here is a very special appreciation of Krishna's power of protection. Of course, when he appeared in the prison house of Kamsa, as the painting shows, he showed his four-armed form of Lord Vishnu. He explicitly said, I've come to show you this form so that you will not mistake that I'm your child. I'm the Supreme Lord. Not even like hint. It's I'm Supreme Lord. And then he assumed the form of a small child because of their parental affection and their request for him to do that. But that same Krishna who assumed a childlike form came and killed the terror of the universe, Kamsa. So he rescued Devaki from Kamsa and released her from prison and Vasudeva. And Krishna released Kunti and her sons from a series of constant dangers. In the purport, Prabhupada mentions these, and the next verse also identifies them one by one, so we'll go through them one by one. When Duryodhana tried to feed Bhima a poison cake, when Duryodhana tried to burn the Pandavas alive in a palace made of black, when the brothers had to face man-eating rakshasas like Kidimba, when they were cheated by the Kauravas in gambling, and on numerous other occasions. Oh, that was Kunti. Then here's Devaki, where Krishna and Balaram are releasing them from the prison of Kamsa after Kamsa was killed. Now, these are 12-year-old boys releasing their mother and father. So Krishna protected them, and of course he finished Kamsa. So Kunti's prayer is saying that she was shown more favor because Krishna did not save the other children of Devaki, whereas he saved the children of Kunti. The six sons of Devaki were killed. This was done because Devaki's husband, Vasudeva, was living, whereas Kunti was a widow, and there was none to help her except Krishna. The conclusion is that Krishna endows more favor to a devotee who is in greater dangers. So if you're in dangers, celebrate. In greater dangers, celebrate some more. Why? Because Krishna shows more favor to such a person. Sometimes Krishna puts his devotees in such dangers because in that condition of helplessness, the devotee becomes more attached to the Lord. The more the attachment is there for the Lord, the more success there is for the devotee. She's disclosing some transcendental truths, very special truths about the bhakti process. Question, what was the reason? I was more afflicted with suffering by my karmas. I was suffering even more than Devaki. I was saved by you, my master. She had a husband, Vasudeva, and thus had the possibility of having more children. And since you were the crest jewel among all children, what need was there for her previous inferior children? We're not saved. Interesting logic. You got it? Interesting. That's vision one. Moreover, I was again and again saved from a host of dangers, whereas she was saved from one little danger caused by Kamsa. She had not even a trace of danger since she was happy with repeated expectations that the Supreme Lord would be born from her womb. And after you were born, she had no danger at all. Of course, her children were killed. I was in all ways wretched. You were merciful to me because you are the friend of the most fallen. I was not like fortunate Devaki who had prema for you. The humility of Kunti. So she's recalling these ways that Krishna protected, and this is the final verse for today. My dear Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poison cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly, from sufferings during our exile in the forest, and from the battle where great generals fought. And now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashwatthama. So we're going to go through one by one these interventions of Krishna to protect the devotees. So Vrishat is the poisoned cake. So what do you know about the poison cake? Nothing? What do you know about the poison cake?
Well, they put poison to kill Bhima.
They kill Bhima. Yeah. When you heard yesterday, those of you that were with us yesterday, you heard that when Pandu had made this mistake, when a brahmana and a brahmani had assumed the form of a deer and a female deer, and he shot them with arrows, and then they transformed into the brahmana and brahmani, and the brahmana cursed Pandu that as I am dying in this circumstance, you will also immediately die by combining with your wives. So Pandu went to the forest with the intention of living the life of asceticism. And in that forest life is where the five Pandavas were born. Pandu died there in the forest. There's Kunti with her five sons and no husband. The sages in the forest advised, go back immediately to Hastinapur and take shelter and protection in the royal family, because her husband was the king. And the firstborn son between Dhritarashtra and Pandu, the firstborn son was Yudhisthira, so he was the rightful heir to the throne. Go back to Hastinapur. When they went back to Hastinapur, it wasn't immediately awful. It was uncomfortable because for the Kauravas, because while Pandu was in the forest for all these years, Dhritarashtra, the blind king, was seated on the throne, and his sons, headed by Duryodhana, they were ruling the kingdom and the world. They're pretty attached. Although they're young, they hadn't been anointed the king. They was attached to the position of ruling the kingdom. So when the Pandavas came back, there was some jealousy. But it got really bad when Bhima, who was so powerful because boys will play and wrestle, and Bhima would pick up one of the boys and toss him in the air, and then another one, and 10 of them. It was so powerful. Duryodhana couldn't stand it. So he made a plan to kill Bhima. And they thought of a really good idea, because Bhima likes to eat. He has a name, a special name for Vrikodhar, voracious eater. So they planned a summer outing, the special summer palace, 7 stories tall, according to Mahabharata, made of marble and ivory and coral, and just like, you know, fantastically opulent. But, you know, the boys were interested in sporting and playing and swimming. And at the end, there was a big meal, a picnic. And Duryodhana personally put enough poison in Bhima's cake to kill 100 men. So Bhima ate it all. They're waiting to see him keel over. Nothing happened. Then it was the end of the day that everyone went back. Bhima felt a little tired. He said, I'll just take a little nap here by the side of the river and killing the arranger. So while he was napping, they tied him up in ropes. And then they pushed him in the river, tied up in ropes. They thought for sure he's dead. As fate would have it, this was the Ganges, and the Ganges flows from the outer covering of the universe all the way down to the bottom of the universe, where the Nagas reside. And the river carried him all the way to Nagaloka. And the Nagas, seeing this huge body, started biting the body. But the poison of the Nagas was the exact antidote for the poison given by Duryodhana. So the poison wore off. And here's Bhima seeing all these Nagas biting him. So he just expanded his body and burst the ropes and had the Naga battle. And some of the Nagas went to Vasuki and Arka. Help! There's this person. We don't know what to do. He's destroying all the Nagas. It's a description of the Mahabharata. It's long. I'll do it short. Vasuki assumed the form of a celestial human, went from his throne, came before Bhima. Arka, as described in Mahabharata, was previously in the human society as the great-grandfather of Kunti. We discussed this yesterday. Kunti's father was the same as Vasudeva's father, because they're brother and sister, and their father was Shurasena. So Shurasena's grandfather, or the great-grandfather of Kunti, was Arka in a previous life, and he immediately recognized, oh, this is Bhima. Let's honor him. What's an appropriate way for honoring him? They decided the appropriate way for honoring him was Nagarasa, some kind of special beverage that is very unique for Nagaland. So they brought him many pots, and the voracious eater Bhima drank them all. They had never seen anybody do anything like that before. Each one of them, it's something like makes one as strong as 10,000 elephants, and he drank them all.
Then he felt a little tired.
He took a nap. 8 days passed before Bhima returned. The Nagas, they have this mystical capacity to know what's going on in distant places. So they told Bhima everything that had happened. The attempted murders, how he got to Nagaloka. Plan to murder. And then they advised him that you better get back because your mother is very worried about you. Those of you that are mothers, imagine your son's gone for 8 days. But Kunti became pacified just by hearing from Vidura not to worry. Imagine those of you that are mothers that your son is gone for 8 days and Vidura says you don't need to worry, you stop worrying. But that's Kunti, and that's Vidura. Vidura said, Vyasadeva pronounced that these sons of yours will live a long life, and they will rule the whole world. So what Vyasadeva says can't be wrong. So don't worry, he'll come back soon. Be peaceful. That's all he needed to say, and she was peaceful. Vyasadeva can't be wrong, Vidura can't be wrong. Surely my son will come back. Just like that. So when Bhima came back and disclosed, you know, this whole thing that just happened and the attempted murder, Bhima just wanted the word from Yudhisthira. Tell me. I've got a powerful club here. I'll finish them all. And Yudhisthira's advice was, no, we've only come back recently to Hastinapur. Before we were in the forest for our whole lives, And all the alliances with other kings and great rulers are in the hands of the Kauravas. So now is not the right time to do something. We should just be very careful. Now, if you can recall, some of you attended that discussion on anatomy of anartas, and one of the important qualities for a devotee is saralata, or being straightforward, no duplicity. So here's some Yudhisthira is indicating prudence, which is not the same as duplicity. It was just prudent to not make them, you know, go after them. Supposing even they had won, as all those other kings said, no, it's not advisable. Just be very careful, especially Duryodhana. Be very careful. So some time passed. It was failure number one, because Krishna, by his internal potency, he protected Bhima from Vishat, the poison cake. But then there's Maha Agne from a great fire. So there was another plan to kill the Pandavas. The plan was Purochana was very expert in matters to do with fire and construction, so he was enlisted to build a highly inflammable house soaked in lac, like shellac. It's highly flammable. And invite the Pandavas to go spend some time in this nice summer home, in this nice little town that's like a tourist town. It's part of our kingdom. And we'll just burn them alive. So when the proposal was made, Yudhisthira didn't want to say, no, we don't want to go because we don't trust you. He didn't say that. He said, okay, we'll go, but we don't trust you. Or he didn't say that. There's some prudence involved in not disclosing what he knew. On the way out, wait a minute, there's a slide that's missing. On the way out, Vidura spoke a riddle. Audible for everyone to understand, but nobody but Yudhisthira could understand, including Kunti, couldn't understand the riddle. Something to do about destruction, not with a sharp weapon, and those that are wise will be safe and protected. So Kunti later said, what did he say? I couldn't understand what he said. And Yudhisthira explained, there's going to be a plan to kill us with use of fire. And he advised us, be careful. Some mention of a tunnel. So later, Vidura sent somebody who was very expert in creating a tunnel, and a tunnel was dug from somewhere within the house going out to the river. And so on the evening that the plan was for them to be killed, they themselves set fire to the house of Lak. They descended through the tunnel, and when they got on the other side of the tunnel, who was waiting for them but Vidura, to take them to the other side of the river and to safety. And for some period of time, they were thought to be dead, but they weren't dead. And during that period of time that they were thought to be dead, they were in the forest, and in the forest one Rakshasa named Hidimba, or in the words of Kunti, Purusha Adha, cannibals or Rakshasas. When Hidimba smelled the scent of human flesh, he got really excited. He sent his sister, Hidimbi, to go check out the scene. When Hidimbi, because the Pandavas had slept, Bhima was standing watch. She saw Bhima, and something happened. Cupid's arrow, woo, woo, woo. She became attracted. So she assumed the form of a very beautiful woman and started this lovely conversation with Bhima about, you know, become my husband. And Bhima declined, and Bidimba overheard, watched all this, and he became enraged. He came out and attacked Bhima. That was the wrong thing to do. And Bhima finished him. And later, with the consent of both Kunti and Yudhishthira, Bhima married Bidimbi. And when son was born, he later became part of the Mahabharata battle. Asat Sabhaya. Sabha means assembly, and Asat Sabhaya, the vicious assembly, Krishna pictured here very clearly protected, at least protected Draupadi. Now the Pandavas, they lost all their possessions. They lost their kingdom. Now they've gambled their wife, at least Yudhishthira did. There's the blind Dhritarashtra. And by his side, Drona and grandfather Bhishma. Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana and Karna, who wished to see the Draupadi disgraced, but Krishna protected her by supplying unlimited sari. The next that's mentioned is Vana, Vasa, Krishratata. Krishratata means suffering or misery. So they underwent many sufferings in their Vana Vasa, their exile in the forest. Now this is Draupadi because Kunti, she stayed back. She stayed in Hastinapur in the house of Vidura. But many, many difficulties were encountered by the Pandavas and Kunti in the course of their long duration of stay in the forest. And Maharatha Astratha, the great battle where great generals fought. So here's Krishna, the charioteer of Arjuna. There we know his grandfather Bhishma, and so many other great, great heroes. So we're going to go real quick, Mahabharata battle scene. Boys especially like Mahabharata and Ramayana battle scenes. This is a painting of the first day of the battle, where all five of the Pandavas come before the chariot of grandfather Bhishma. Because he acted like their father when they were growing up. In the absence of their father, grandfather Bhishma acted as their father. So they looked upon him in that way, and they're feeling great difficulty that they're going to have to be in a battle against him. So they're taking his blessings. And on day 9 of the 18-day battle, Krishna specifically protects Arjuna from Bhishma's weapons. So as the fighting was going on, I'm skipping some things. Grandfather Bhishma, his name means great vow, terrible vow. He took a vow that he would never marry and he would never become king. And he kept that vow at great odds. But Krishna, by trick, caused Bhishma to break his vow. He took a vow that he would kill the Pandavas with 5 arrows on day 8. Evening, Krishna tricked by having Arjuna ask for those 5 arrows. Duryodhana gave him 5 arrows, so grandfather Bhishma's vow to kill the Pandavas with the 5 arrows was broken. So Bhishma then took a vow, another vow, that said, by the end of the day, either I will kill Krishna's dear friend Arjuna, or Krishna will break his vow. And his vow was he would never pick up a weapon. He wouldn't fight. So the arrows of Bhishma are being sent to kill Arjuna, but Krishna is taking those arrows in his chest, moving this way, moving that way, so his dear devotee, Arjuna, would not be harmed by Bhishma's arrows. When the fighting became so intense towards the end of the day, Krishna saw the difficulty that Arjuna was in, so he picked up the chariot wheel of Arjuna and started charging at Grandfather Bhishma to smash Grandfather Bhishma. And Arjuna's holding on to Krishna's leg and, no, don't smash him. But Grandfather Bhishma was so happy because he knew what Krishna would do. He's a pure devotee. Krishna is going to protect his devotee above keeping his word. His word is, I shall not fight. That's insignificant when it comes to the higher principle of giving protection to my devotee. So Grandfather Bhishma just dropped his weapons, stretched his arms out, and smashed me. Ecstatic. There's the B.G. Sharma painting of the scene. That very evening, so, but it stopped when the sun goes down. That's a sign, a conch blows, no more fighting for the day. So the Pandavas went that evening to Grandfather Bhishma's tent and said, we don't know what to do. You're on the opposite side. We don't want to have a battle with you, but we can't be victorious in this battle as long as you're alive. Can you tell us how we can kill you? I said, sure, should have asked long ago. I would have gladly told you. A long description of Grandfather Bhishma making arrangements for wives with one of his brothers, Ichitrabirya, at the Swayambar ceremony of the king of Kashi, who had three daughters, Amba and Ambika and Ambalika, there they are in the chariot. He went to that Swayambar ceremony, just picked them up, put them in the chariot, and drove off. See you guys later. So, big battle. And everyone was defeated by Grandfather Bhishma. But one of the three sisters had a problem. And it became a really big problem because she had already given her heart to whom? Starts with an S. Shalva. So Bhishma said, no problem, you just go back and marry Shalva. Your two sisters can stay. So when she went back to take Shalva, because they already had, you know, exchanged their little secret messages, however they did it, text messaging. I'll marry you marry me. Totally did it. So they already had that kind of bond with one another. But Shalva said, I can't marry you. You've been touched by another man, so you can go marry whoever you like. So she went back to Bhishma and said, you won't marry me. You've touched me, so you have to marry me. See, I can't marry you. Take your vow. You go back to your father. We'll give you shelter. Anyways, whole series of things. And eventually, Amba received a benediction that in her next life, she would be able to kill Bhishma. Now, interestingly, when she was born in her next life, she was born a woman, but then later became a man. And it's like a long story. So Bhishma said, I can't fight against a woman. So if you just put Sikandi over here, this is Krishna and Arjuna, but you put Sikandi right in the front line, I'm going to put my weapons down. I won't fight. Sikandi can then fire so many arrows and I'm finished. That's how you can do it. So that's what happened. Then another general, Jayadrath, commonly we know that Dhritarashtra and Gandhari had 100 sons headed by Duryodhana. But there was one daughter. The daughter's name was Drushala. And Jayadrath married Drushala, Dhritarashtra's only daughter. This man was such a bad person. On his wedding day, as he was proceeding in the royal chariot, he's married now, and he sees Draupadi, just by circumstance, in Kanyavan, in a forest. And he becomes, you know, lustily attracted to Draupadi. So some time passed, and later again, by circumstance, he saw Draupadi alone. And so he came and tried to kidnap Draupadi. Draupadi's not a little pansy. She punched him right in the jaw, knocked him down. He's a great general. So the great general Jayadrath put her on his chariot, tied her up, and started driving away. She's married. And when the Pandavas came to know this, Bhima especially was furious. A huge battle, and Bhima with a big club was ready to pound Jayadrath into pulp. But Yudhisthira stopped him. And Yudhisthira, all the Pandavas assembled around him, were asked what to do, and Yudhisthira said, just shame him. What he has done is shameful. So take a sword and cut off almost all of his hair, just little patches of hair left on his head. For one who has once been honored, dishonor is worse than death. So Jayadrath got in this get-back mentality to take revenge. He went to the mountains of the Himalayas with his funny-looking hairdo. And underwent severe penances to please Lord Shiva. And after some time, some of his hair grew. And Lord Shiva appeared. And he gave two boons to Jayadrath. One was that he could defeat all the Pandavas except Arjuna, and that anyone who made Jayadrath's head fall to the ground would have his own head broken into 7 pieces. I got this twice. So, there we go. So now, back to the Kurukshetra battle. Abhimanyu became one of the soldiers in the Kurukshetra battle. Abhimanyu was the son of who? Arjuna and Subhadra. So when Abhimanyu eventually became the husband of Uttara in the following way, during the final year of incognito, Arjuna took the position of a dance instructor for the daughter of the king, Virat. So Uttara was his disciple, and during the course of repelling the Kauravas, who came, it's a long story, Mahabharata's really a long story. The Kauravas came to disclose the fact that the Pandavas were taking shelter in King Virat's kingdom. They thought it was before the 1 year had lapsed, but they were wrong. But Arjuna then took the position of a Kshatriya instead of a dance teacher and single-handedly repelled all the Kaurava army. So when the dance teacher came back, King Virat said, you're not a dance teacher. Who are you? He's Arjuna, he's Bhima, he's this one, that one. So King said, I would like to reward and have you accept my daughter as your wife. And Arjuna said, well, teacher can't accept a disciple as a wife. But I have a son. He's at marriageable age. And your daughter and Abhimanyu would make a really good husband-wife couple. And so they were married. And not too much later is when the Kurukshetra battle took place. And on day 13, Abhimanyu showed prowess and heroism and fighting skill that was unstoppable. And so the Kauravas decided we have to stop him. So they made an arrangement where 7 generals violating codes of combat surrounded him, fighting him, smashing him, and standing alone. And the reason he was standing alone because the other soldiers were repelled by Jayadrath. Here's a nice painting. When he was, his weapons were gone, he picked up his chariot wheel and was smashing people with his chariot wheel. They cut off his arms and he was still fighting without his arms. So there's Jayadrath who's holding back the Pandavas so that these 7 generals can kill Abhimanyu. And this happened towards the end of the day, and Arjuna took a vow. Tomorrow, I will kill Jayadrath, and if I don't kill Jayadrath, then I will take my own life entering into fire. So the Kauravas really happy. We don't have to kill Arjuna. We just have to protect Jayadrath. And Arjuna will kill himself. They had a big party celebrating. Tomorrow we're going to see Arjuna die. Then Krishna asked Arjuna, why did you take such an impossible vow? He said, well, I knew if I took the vow, you'd make sure that Jayadrath was killed. I'm completely dependent upon you. And you always protect your devotee. So, day 13, huge assembly. The days, look at all these soldiers lined up for battle on both sides. And the mission from one side is protect Jayadrath. The mission from the other side is Arjuna wants to kill Jayadrath like anything. So, you know, big bloody battle description, special arrows, quiver that had unlimited numbers of arrows. I don't know how they would fire so many arrows at one time, but hundreds of arrows at one time. Tens of thousands of soldiers in an hour. 30,000 soldiers in 1 hour were killed, according to Mahabharata. That's a lot. Then they decided, the Kauravas decided to bring Dronacharya to combat Arjuna. So Arjuna, for some time, he fought with Drona, but recognizing that's not the mission here. The mission is against Jayadrath. So Krishna very expertly drove the chariot in such a way that Dronacharya was left behind. Then Duryodhana challenged Arjuna, but by very expert archery skills, Duryodhana's efforts were thwarted, and in fact, Arjuna pierced the hand of Duryodhana, his fingers and his hands with arrows, so he couldn't fight. Then he sped towards Jayadrath, but the whole army was there protecting Jayadrath. That's Krishna, by the way, and there's Arjuna, by the way, and there's Jayadrath. Bhima took his big club and smashing and smashing and smashing to clear the way, and so many persons destroyed by the club of Bhima. And then finally, very special arrow charged with Lord Brahma's power. Arjuna released the arrow and the head of Jayadrath went sailing through the air some distance away and landed on the lap of his father, who was in meditation. When he saw on his lap the head of his son, he threw the head onto the ground and his head cracked into 7 pieces. So the conclusion is, wherever there is Krishna and Arjuna, there's sure to be victory. Krishna protected. But the battle isn't over. That's just day 14. Day 15, Dronacharya, who has now become the replacement for Grandfather Bhishma, is directly going to be going to battle against Arjuna. And fiercely he fought. Very, very powerful, with all the skills of Parashuram at his call. So Bhima, of course there are different versions of Mahabharata, but in this version, he killed an elephant, Ashwatthama, and he called out very loudly, Ashwatthama is dead. And when Dronacharya heard Ashwatthama is dead, he wanted to know, is that my son? So to know if that was his son, he went and asked Yudhishthira in Krishna's presence. And Krishna said, yeah. And Yudhishthira was hesitating. How can I tell a lie? I never told a lie. So the trick was, Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead. So hearing that Ashwatthama was dead from Yudhishthira, Dronacharya dropped his weapons. He meditated upon the personality of Godhead. And the enemy who was prophesied to kill him, Drishtadyumna, who was the son of who? Drupad. He had taken the position of commander-in-chief of the Pandavas, and he came without weapons in his hand. Drishtadyumna beheaded Dronacharya. Next day, day 17, this is Karna. He also had received special skills, military skills from Parashuram. That's a whole other Mahabharata intrigue. And fighting, the battlefield was so muddied with blood that the chariot wheel of Karna got stuck. And as Karna was trying to unstuck the chariot wheel, Krishna instructed Arjuna, fire your special weapon and destroy Karna. And Karna was objecting. How can you give this instruction? What kind of religious principles are you following? And Krishna's reply, when it suits you, you adamantly oppose an unjust act against yourself or against your friends. But you do not speak up against the injustice of others. Where was your sense of justice when the Pandavas were cheated out of their kingdom? Or when Draupadi was dragged into the assembly by her hair? Or when 6 warriors surrounded Abhimanyu and cut him down? No, my friend, you'll be treated the way that you have allowed others to be treated. You're going to get your karma. Or as an accord with the principles of Dharma, that persons who violate principles of Dharma are to be punished. So Arjuna had another special weapon, Anjalika weapon, and Duryodhana, seeing that Karna was killed. This is the next to the last day. Duryodhana became so morose. It's described that even when his other brothers were killed, he didn't feel that same gravity. He had such attachment and affection for Karna. So this is Duryodhana showing that his preference for Krishna's armies and Arjuna's preference for Krishna, since Krishna said he wouldn't fight. That's a very calculating person, not at all a devotional person by any means. So the big battle between Bhima and Duryodhana. It looks like they've got an audience. There's somebody with a plow. Who's that? Balaram. Finally, Duryodhana was killed. Well, his thighs were broken. He's lying on the battlefield. And with that, Ashwatthama, the son of Drona tried to kill the child within the womb of Uttara. So Kunti's making reference to this. He whom Krishna protects, Rake Krishna Marike, Mari Krishna Rake K. He whom Krishna protects, no one can kill. But if Krishna wants to kill someone, no one can give him protection. This is the end of our little description of this prayer of Kunti, text 24. Many great misfortunes befell the Pandavas, but in all circumstances, they simply depended on Krishna, who always saved them. Lord Kunti is honoring this quality that Krishna has. He protects his devotee. Now we're going to hear, next time we get together, discuss the rest of her prayers. How is this? This is another puzzle about Krishna. He's equal to everyone, but he appears to be partial to his devotees. He's equal to everyone, that's true. And he appears to be partial to his devotees, that's also true. So how are these contradictory qualities in the same person? So stay tuned for the next discussion. Kunti discloses the truth about this. She understands Krishna, although she says she doesn't understand about Krishna. She understands Krishna to the extent that Krishna has revealed himself to her. And he reveals himself according as we heard, to the sincerity of the devotee. So we have to exercise our sincerity muscle and become progressively further and further sincere and pure in heart. Hare Krishna. It's 1 o'clock. Any discussion? Yes?
Maharaj, Queen Kunti is offering such nice prayers.
Yes.
Such prayers that she's very advanced devotee. Who was her spiritual master, or from where did she get so much devotion?
Well, ultimately from Krishna, but Vyasadeva, Domi was the family priest. But she's surrounded by Vidura as one who guided her in the absence of her father. Bhishma, you know, all these great personalities were there to give her revelation and guidance and Krishna understanding, but also from within her heart.
I was just wondering, because we hear of such austerities and sadhana very.
I know what your question, the root of your question is, you have to receive from someone, but she received from someone. Those someone is exalted, highly elevated.
Was she also an associate of Krishna like the Pandavas?
Yes, I mentioned that, like the Pandavas. The contrast between Mahabharata and the Bhagavatam is, I illustrated that. For us, the Supreme Court is the Bhagavatam. If there's some discrepancy between something Mahabharata says and Bhagavatam says, that's the High Court. There's something to be said about the other explanation. There's some message to be received. But the ultimate understanding is from the Bhagavatam. Anything? Yes?
In the previous chapter, Drona sang to be punished, 7th chapter, in one of the words, he said that Krishna is, he has no father and he doesn't have any sons. And in the spiritual world, we did hear that Yashoda Mata and they are there in Golu conflict. So how do we understand that in the purport given?
I'd like to see the context, but he who is the source of everything is the source of everything. He has no source. He has no father. But he has a father in Rasa. And in Dwarka, he has so many queens and so many sons. So he has sons, but he has no sons. These are this contradictory messages. Within Krishna, there are opposites, and he's the resolution of all opposites within him. So it takes transcendental intelligence to say, you know, it's a one or a zero. It can't be both a one or a zero. It takes transcendental intelligence to understand the meaning of these things. Through devotion, one can understand. Through process of logic and reason, one cannot understand because they're contradictory.
My question was, like, when they are in co-location of Mata, like, is it that, like, a devotee mode, or is it like, again, like, the Maya is not there, like,
how? Yoga Maya. They're devoted in Goloka, in the mood of intimacy, of love, and they don't see his divinity. And, yes, and these contradictions don't bother them. You know, like in his Boma Leela, when, of course, this doesn't take place in Goloka Vrindavan because there's no Indra, but at the end of, Brahma stealing the calves and the cowherd boys, 1 year passed on earth, and the cowherd boys that had been in the cave didn't have any understanding of, you know, this whole idea that a whole year had passed on earth during that moment of Lord Brahma. Krishna had taken the position of the sons of the mothers and the calves of the cows, so their parental affection could be experienced. But the cowherd boys didn't have any sense of that. By the internal potency, they just forgot. They were covered by yoga to facilitate Krishna's pastimes. There's a different set of rules than, you know, logic. Does that address your question?
Again, one more same contradiction is that Krishna's universal form is only meant for the less intelligent people, but the universal world form was shown to Arjuna. Even, like, maybe, I mean, I'm trying to understand, like, is it from the, we should understand it as a pastime, or when Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna, at the end he had shown the universal form. So after hearing Bhagavad Gita, he's knowledgeable. No, he heard from Krishna directly. So why was the universal form was shown to Arjuna? It was meant for less intelligent.
Well, Prabhupada explains, Arjuna was asking for the benefit of future people that may pose themselves as God. They don't have the qualification. And one of those qualifications is showing their universal form. Seeing the universal form is not the clincher. It's devotion, ultimately. Not sense evaluation, it's devotion, ultimately. But for people of this age, Kali Yuga would follow Krishna's departure. For people of this age in Kali Yuga. So if someone comes forward and says, or followers say, he is God, then one can say, please show your universal form. you claim to be, please show your universal form. It doesn't end there, but that's one of the explanations that Prabhupada has given. Because someone can say, well, you don't have the eyes to see. I can show my universal form. Well, then you don't have the devotion. So I can't give you the eyes to see. It was so for the devotee, it's part of the appreciation of Krishna's divinity. For the unintelligent, it's here's divinity. Real intelligence is to take the position, Tadami Buddhiyogamta, take the position of devotion. And Krishna gives the intelligence how to understand him, how to go to him. And for those that don't, at least, you know, awe and veneration. Which Arjuna responds, seeing that universal form, please withdraw that form and show me your original form. Yes?
Maharaj, in these prayers, a very deep mood of awe and reverence come from Mother Kunti.
Yes.
But she also had, as per my understanding, Vatsalya mood towards Krishna. Is that reflected in these prayers at all?
Two things. Her position was the aunt, the sister of Krishna's father. So Krishna treated her as like a mother. Kunti didn't like treating Krishna as mother to her son because of her reverential mood. But it's not the same as within Vrindavan, then Mathura, then in Dwaraka, successively, there's more of a sense of majesty. More of a sense of majesty. And then in Vaikuntha, more of a sense of majesty, and the intimacy diminishes. Still divinity, you know, the position of Narayana as the supreme, but the intimacy diminishes. So she's in this in between position as the mother of the Pandavas, and something not so dissimilar from Arjuna. Arjuna's primary rasa with Krishna is friend, so he would interact with Krishna's friend. But then he came to understand Krishna's not just his friend through these, you know, the universal form inside Krishna's instructions. So some of both for the Pandavas, and some of both for Kunti, some of both for Vasudeva and Devaki. They saw Krishna as their son. This description is there in the 10th canto when after Krishna killed Kamsa and released them from the prison, Krishna is standing before Vasudeva and Devaki wanting their parental embrace. But they're looking upon him as divinity. So Krishna covered them with his yogamaya potency and they embraced Krishna like their child. So some of both. In Kunti's position, Devaki's position, Pandava's position. In part to fulfill the varieties of happiness of Krishna, and also to reciprocate with their particular mode of love. So some of both, somewhere in between.